Don't get lost in the waves of change.
190 pages, tens of hours of lawyers. One takeaway today is you now put on your listing agent hat when you meet with a buyer and you treat him the same way. So that's what you need to take away.
KGCI Real Estate On Air, keeping you informed and empowered as the NAR settlement brings seismic shifts to the real estate industry.
It's a consultation and a strategy. When you think of how people need to buy a home in this market, it takes great strategy. So why not strategize with that buyer? They need your help more than ever.
Depend on KGCI Real Estate On Air.
All right, guys, welcome back to the High Performance Agent Podcast. I'm Tina and I'm here with Laura. Say hey.
Hi.
Someday we're going to come up with a better way to open our episodes. I'm taking suggestions on that if anyone wants to DM us and let us know. So Laura and I were talking and I started unloading to her about this terrible client event that I had back in 2014. And I was saying, I feel like we should share this because if I think about, I have a very deep dive events module in High Performance Agent Academy. So plug for the academy if you really want to master a lot of what I teach in these episodes, I have like the playbooks and the details ready for you. And this is going to be kind of a fun anecdotal way to like just dispense a little bit of that information. But what I learned in teaching the course several times is that there are a lot of reasons agents don't hold events. And the primary one is that they're afraid that the event will not be cool or good and or that nobody will come. And I've had a lot. I've hosted so many events over the last 20 years. I mean, I'm sure I've probably hosted 100 events by now, a lot more if you count all of the trainings that I hosted at Keller Williams, which were very like detailed at times. And I have had some absolute terrible events and I live to tell the tale. So I kind of wanted to say, let's have an episode to talk about what I've learned about how to make sure an event is very successful. And then also kind of the mindset that I've taken on to also be okay learning through experience and taking the lessons and then literally documenting them, putting them into my checklist and like implementing next time to just constantly get better and better. So why don't we start with talking about my terrible event? Does that sound like a good place, Laura?
The mistakes not to make.
Yeah. And it's funny because I asked Laura if she's ever had a terrible event and she was like, no. And I was like, oh, good. Okay. Well, that makes one of us. So I started my team in 2013. And by then I had been an agent for 8 years. I'd been having events for a little while at that point. Like my first event I ever did was a bowling party at this really cute local bowling alley. And that was, again, for the reasons I said, very nerve-wracking for me. I was so afraid that nobody was going to come. And there's like the finance side of it too, where it's just like not only an investment, but sort of the fear of what if I buy all this food and rent a venue and like nobody comes and da-da-da-da. So I'd already been hosting events for a little while by the time this one happened. But I did find that events were part of my magic and they were a great way to bring people together and expand my database, so many things. And it gave me a reason to like reach out to people and invite them to something and not just have the same conversations all the time of, hey, it's Tina. Like, do you need to buy? Like, I know you just bought your house 2 years ago. Like, so events are such like a great outreach that I decided to start having a lot of them. And there was a lot of upside to that. It really helped me grow my business. And I also learned a lot. So back in 2014, we decided to have a happy hour. And oh my gosh, it was such an epic fail. Okay. So I don't even know where to begin the laundry list of what went wrong. But first of all, we went with a happy hour, which is not ideal for my database because I am sober and a lot of the people that I know also do not drink. So happy hours are never a slam dunk with my network because it's just half of them probably wouldn't come. So that was my first mistake. And then the second mistake was we did it at this kind of bar slash restaurant in a cute area. However, it was sort of like a rundown restaurant without like a lot of name recognition. It wasn't that close to the highway. So kind of like not central. And ultimately who ended up being there was my parents, my team members, and my financial advisor. It was really embarrassing. Although no one else was there to see it or know that it wasn't successful. So really, it was kind of no harm, no foul. But there were so many things that I took from that that have helped me have really, really good events to this day. So one of them is the venue, I always say, needs to be hot and spicy. Have you heard me say that, Laura?
Yeah. I don't know if you use the terms hot and spicy, but that works today.
Yeah, it became like shorthand in our team at some point of like, if I am going to try to do, and I feel like a happy hour or anything at a restaurant in particular is like a good example of like a venue that is like new or has like some buzz around it, some name recognition, somewhere that people want to go, somewhere people want to be seen, somewhere that people want to take pictures. So it's a lot easier to drive people to a venue. Like the venue can be leverage for you, or the venue can be something that you have to work against. So I'm very selective about where we do things from a centrality standpoint and convenience for my target audience, as well as like the aesthetics and just the experience that they're going to have. And I'm also very like budget conscious. So it's not like I'm just blowing money to like look good, but I feel like it's just that thought work before I start planning to just get the key elements right so that the event itself just does the heavy lifting. And I don't really have to follow up and beg people to come and send, you know, three reminders and that kind of thing. So well, do you have any thoughts about that?
I do. I think when you talk about the venue, like I also want to bring like a different perspective that yes, it's a venue, but it's also like the presentation and the feel of the event, because I got started very small and like, and I still think my venue was great because it was in the backyard of my house. But like I rented out tables for my backyard. Like I made the aesthetic of the event. It was like a pumpkin painting party for kids. Very nice. So like, yes, a venue is important, but like it's also presentation if you're like just trying to get started.
That is so true. And I feel like it's just doing kind of like the work for the extras to create the aesthetics. So yes.
Work
and
for
by the way,
extra.
I love the idea for a pumpkin painting party. I might need to steal that because I'm actually very sad about this. And I've taught this in my academy and so many agents have done it since me. And it's not that like creative, but my most popular event has always been a fall fest at a local farm. And the farm that I love has closed. And I texted them yesterday to schedule fall fest. I was like, I'm doing it because I skipped it last year because I was still kind of on maternity leave when I would have planned it. And I was like, I'm back. Everyone's been asking about it. And then like, womp, womp, they're closed. And I'm like, what else am I going to do? So pumpkin painting is so perfect. And it's a lot more personal. And I love having an activity, something for people to show up and do, because when you're having clients come who don't all know each other, they're not as excited to come and like mingle with a bunch of strangers if there's no like activity to direct them to. So that's another thing that I've learned. Like I think happy hours in general. Well, yeah. And I think like aside from like the alcohol element of happy hours, like they don't have the activity driver. So I feel like you're like, again, it would be one thing to have a happy hour at a rundown no name place like we did. It's another to do it at the brand new brewery where there's, you know, the ability to have a tasting or a tour or have someone give a talk about, you know, something interesting that's relevant. Like similarly, I think actually a year or two after my terrible happy hour, we tried it again and it was a huge success. We did it at a new kind of food hall that had opened up in Baltimore City. Super buzzy, super central, right off the highway. At the time the event was happening, it was still very new. A lot of people hadn't even gotten around to being there yet. And I feel like there's this thing that I've done with events, but all things networking, where it's like, just ask the important CEO that you don't know if they'll give a talk, and like, maybe they will. So for that event, I reached out to the developer, I think through like the event planning contact, and said, we would love for you to talk for 10 minutes about how you developed this building and the vision you have, because they were doing a lot in the neighborhood overall. And I said, would you be willing to talk? And they were like, of course. So then he gave a talk during the event that was part of the marketing. And then back then, Facebook Live was like way more of a thing, but I live streamed it on Facebook and brought the event to a ton of other people who weren't there. And again, just like all these ways to layer in on the brand. So yeah, I think having not just an activity, but looking for ways to make things interesting, informative, unique or that VIP access. And like, I think it would be easy to look at me and think like, oh my gosh, like Tina knows everyone. And like, she, you know, like, I think it's easy to think that someone came from a certain place and that's why they have what they have. And I do have, you know, some privilege of like how my parents brought me up, but like, I did not grow up in like a pod of people in my town where I was like hooked up with all the right people and knew everybody since high school and had all the right connections. Like, I've developed all of the relationships I have through my own like effort and like just reaching out, getting to know people, supporting other people's businesses before they even knew who I was, and just really like making inroads. And not to be like a social climber, because that is not my thing. I find that very painful. But just because like I genuinely want to know and get to know people, especially if I admire their business or something about them and I feel like there's some vibe that I'm catching. So like, that's been a huge part of my success. And events have been a way for me to kind of bring that together, invite people to those events who aren't necessarily clients and be like, hey, like, do you want to come to this thing I'm doing? So I've really just sort of created this like web of relationships by just being willing to put myself out there in a way that might sound like a big undertaking, but it was just these tiny things, you know, reaching out to the developer.
Being willing to ask, like, I love that. And even if you don't think you know somebody, you might know somebody that knows the somebody. So like being willing to ask is what I heard.
Yeah. Yeah. And like listening to my creative intuition, or like when I have an idea, just if I feel like, and this is comes back to our episode about human design, but like when I get those creative inspiration thoughts that really speak to me, to just look into them a little bit further. It happened to me today. I go to this beautiful Pilates studio called Pilates Lab. Shout out to Chandler. I'll have to tag her in this episode. She opened a year and a half ago. Her space is gorgeous. I love it. I love being there. I love her. I love her standards, the way she runs her business. So I've felt from day one, like, oh, like there's going to be a collaboration here. At some point, like I'm going to find a way to have something here and bring her in. And I've just been kind of biding my time, back to our prior episode where you gave that phrase, not yet. So like, I'm always keeping ideas for events on deck in my mind and then waiting for them to bubble up, like the right thing at the right time. So like when I know it when I see it. And today it just hit me because the Fall Fest, I was so sad about this farm news. And I'm like, oh, like I need to find something else. And I would really rather do something in the spring anyway. And I was working out this morning, and I do get some of my best ideas when I'm working out. And I went up to her at the end, and I know her, and we're like, we're really friendly, but I wasn't sure if she would really want to have an event in the space. But I just said, like, is now a good time for a question? And would you ever want to do like a Mother's Day, like flower arranging thing here, or like a bouquet bar? And she was like, totally. So again, like that might not sound like much of a risk, but I wasn't sure if she would be into it, especially like making a mess in her like space, because it's like all white and really, really gorgeous. So like, you just never know. But like, I feel like everything I've accomplished is just those, it's like the tiniest step forward. None of it is like impressive or grand at the time. It's just moving the ball forward bit by bit by bit.
Yes. And being willing to ask, because it's okay if it wasn't a good fit for her. But if you still like the idea, it's up for you just to find another space where it is a good fit for somebody else.
Totally. And I said to her, if an hour or a week from now you feel like you don't want to do this, like, just let me know. Like, no big deal. Like, that's just kind of me, where I'm like, if I want it to feel great to everybody, or otherwise, don't worry about it. Because I do feel like if that mutual vibe isn't there for anything, but especially things like events and also like hiring and just like chemistry with people, it won't be successful anyway. And actually, that gives me another, I totally forgot about this other flop. Can we talk about my other flop?
Oh, I was just going to say, can we go back to we heard mistake number one, venue.
Oh, okay.
Got that in collaboration. Where's this other mistake? There's got
to
be.
Okay. So yeah, well, going back to the flop of 2014, I feel like the venue was a big problem. The target audience was off because of like the drinking, the happy hour thing. Although we've since had other happy hours that were pretty good, but they were never slam dunks, but like a good event by like any measure for sure. So I think those would be the, and central location. And parking. I'm really big. Parking. Yes, parking was a challenge in that venue. How did you know? Just name all the things that get in the way and they would all apply to this one. And the other thing I'm really into, and you know this because we brainstorm on this, is naming an event, because you only have a few, in this culture, this world we all live in, you only have a few seconds to like get someone's attention. So if the name of your event is vague or unappealing or boring, that does not help, right? Like, so I put a lot of thought into my event names, and I tend to have people brainstorm with me and give me their reactions if I'm not sure, because I like Fall Fest, like, again, that's not like a game changer, but like it communicates what I want. Like you can immediately know what that is, and it sounds kind of fun, and you can kind of like draw a lot of conclusions from that. Just like happy hour. I don't know. I feel like I'm not.
Is that what
up
you named it? Happy hour.
Probably. Yeah, I know it. I know it didn't have a name because back then I didn't worry about what the events were called. So like back then it was like happy hour, bowling party, whatever. And like, that's fine. But I feel like whenever an event is like a little bit different, or I really want to think about how to position it, there is something to that. Although I will say I did have a really great name for an event and it was still a total flop. And that was in, was that last year? I think I've already repressed it. No, it was 2 years ago. So it was in 2022. I've had this thing where I have two hits that happen every fall. Fall Fest, although now I'm in trouble on that, and my Thanksgiving pie party, which I have a whole episode on, by the way. And I've always felt like, oh, they're too close together. I need a really good event in the spring. So I had this thought that I wanted to do an outdoor movie party because I've heard that it works really well for other realtors. I loved the idea of it. So I found a great venue for it, pretty great, although it was kind of out in the country, which worked for Fall Fest, but not as well for the party. And I came up with like a really cute concept and brand, and it was called Sprinkles Under the Stars, which it was a ice cream like business that has like a huge field. And the whole idea was to have ice cream and watch a movie. And it just didn't work because we had to wait until past 8 p.m. for the sun to set to start the movie. And then the movie was like 2 hours. And then, so a couple things. Number one, it was just not a good time for people that have small children. So it left out a huge part of my database.
I'm just laughing.
Well, I'm like, I don't know about you, but I am with my kids, bedtime is 7. And I am like, I don't keep them up. I do keep them up for like really special occasions, but like, oh, yeah. I think a lot of people, you know, whatever, just kids don't stay up late. So like, it was just a fail.
Oh, I agree
so, like,
with that. I was laughing at that. You didn't realize like, it got dark at 8 o'clock.
Well, no. I knew that, but I just thought people would still come. I don't know. I think I was in love with my own idea a little bit and I didn't see straight. And also I was kind of grasping to find something for the spring. So I thought, let's try it. And then what was even crazier is we got rained out. So we had to bump the party 3 weeks later. And we bumped it from like May to June. And I don't know if you know where this is going, but guess what? The sun sets even later in June than in May. So then we had to start the movie even later, but then like people were sort of like restless. We started the movie a little early, but you couldn't see the screen that well. I just wanted to die. Like people were kind of like squinting to see. Luckily there was ice cream. There were like yard games and there were people there with basically teenagers and then whatever. And we did a throwback movie. We did The Parent Trap. And I will say we polled and that was like the clear winner. So one thing I did learn with parties is to like do polls when I'm not sure and like want to kind of crowdsource. And we also did things to increase engagement. Like there were like, I don't know, 50 ice cream flavors from that place. And I think we could offer like 8 in our ice cream bar. So we like did a poll for what ice cream people wanted. So like there was a lot of buzz about the party and like it had a cute name. It was at like a cool spot, but like nothing is going to fix a timing problem. And then the rain and the late sunset, like Laura, I just can't even tell you. I was just squirming. So I will never have an ice cream party again. Mark my words. I think it could totally work in a different context. Not an ice cream party, a movie party. We had an indoor movie party once and that was a huge hit. So maybe I could talk about that too. But do you have any other thoughts about my terrible outdoor movie party? I should have talked to you first. That's your thought.
No, I mean, I think it shows that, like, well, let's go to the touches. Did you still get, like, sometimes I like to say it's actually not about.
Oh my God, you're right. Can we oh my gosh, it? I'm so like, losing sight. Yeah, no, the touches were there and there were extra touches, right? Because we rescheduled and remarketed the party.
But I feel like I always remind myself it's like an open house, an event. Like, yes, we want people to come and we want it to be successful. But at the end of the day, like, it's all that marketing and all those conversations, if you're doing it correctly, that really count.
Oh my gosh, you're so right. And I feel almost silly because, like, I haven't, like, woven that thought into any of this episode thus far. So thank God you're here to point out the obvious. Like, the touches are primary. But for me, I do get, like, juice. Like, I get energy out of the party being a total hit. And then I also, like, very systematic. So I like to have a hit and then repeat it and not do so much mental labor every year, like, figuring out what I'm going to do. So yeah.
I was going to go somewhere else with that. Well, yeah. I want to do a side note, actually. So this is really good that, you know, like, you're hosting your first event and you're being real of like, hey, all of mine did not go correctly and I give you all my tools. But I remember when I wanted to host my bigger event was going to be the Easter egg hunt for the first time. I went and found an agent that had hosted one and was like, can I take some time? Like, what do you want? Like, can I buy you a gift card? Like, you know, everyone's a little bit different. Like, how can I repay you back? And she gave me the complete blueprint so that I didn't have to go through that learning curve. And so, like, I want to send, like, the reminders to you guys out there too. Like, if you see somebody doing something, see if they'll share their secrets. Like, there are a lot of agents out there that will collaborate and be like, yeah, this is how you do it.
That is so true. And I want to say this episode is kind of funny because I'm telling you some of my biggest fails, but only because they've fueled my processes. But I feel like the slam dunk events that I've done, I've templated really well. And if you want to do a slam dunk this year, I feel like the pie party is such a win. Everyone celebrates Thanksgiving. It is such a great way to connect and show gratitude. And there's plenty of lead time between now and Thanksgiving for you to plan. Cause I feel like a lot of people want a lot of time to, like, think ahead for their event. So go back and find that episode in the archive. And then I do break down so many other event concepts in my academy. So just know we have a lot of great tips for you. But I think ultimately, yeah, like, sometimes falling on my face is my best teacher, even though I don't enjoy it. It brings a lot of value. That's for sure.
And I still think at the end of the day, like, people want the community and they want to be a part of it, that they are definitely not judging us, or like, they were still having fun at the movie because you did set yourself up with having other activities that, even though it didn't meet your kind of maybe standards that you know, put on or how your vision, you know, it's just a reminder at the end of the day, like, you know, it still was very successful.
It was. Thank you. At least there was ice cream. That's what I would say. And we also got a really great team picture in the sunset. I was like, at least we have this photo for our marketing.
Actually, you'd asked me if I had any, like, flops or whatever. And I was like, no, like, I'm perfect over here. And I'm just kidding. But last year I did remember with our egg hunt, like, it's outside. So you're always, like, weather dependent. And I always just kind of chance it. And I didn't have a backup. And there was actually, like, a massive storm as we were, like, setting up.
Yeah.
And luckily, like, we were able to get a backup plan for that day. Cause, like, it was going to go away within an hour, but it was, like, right during my hour of the time. And so now if I am going to host, you know, that outside event, like, I'm not going to just trust the weather. I'm going to have a backup plan. And my husband was really awesome too. He's part of the team. He was like, there's so many things we can do. We can go egg our clients' yards and be like, you've been egged. We can donate the food to the fire, you know, department, that, like, even when there's a flop, there's a silver lining.
So true. Oh, I love that. And you know what? That does kind of just make, well, I'm thinking 800 things. And also I have, like, 4 new event ideas I need to write down when we're done, thanks to this conversation. And hopefully our listeners are feeling a little inspired too. But I do want to say I did have a slam dunk movie party. It was indoors. And it was so good. And actually, just,
like,
really
at the
quick,
movie theater?
At the movie theater. So we nailed all the things that were not great about the other examples that I gave. So first of all, we picked a movie that everybody wanted to see. And I don't know if anyone remembers when The Lion King came out as a remake, but it was kind of like Barbie in the sense of, like, multiple generations being excited, like our millennial generation with their, and like Gen X with, like, the Lion King nostalgia of our childhood, but then also any kid that would want to see it. So it was, I think, one of the most popular movies of the summer or whenever it was that it came out a few years ago. So we picked a movie that everybody wanted to see. Our party was on opening weekend, so very strategic to make sure that it was, you know, kind of the first crack to see it. We had it at a central movie theater that was newer and really nice and central to our target market, easy parking, etc. And that was, I think, one of the first times we ever used mass text for invites, which have a way better delivery percentage than Evites. I hate Evite. No offense to anyone. So text delivery is queen with events, if you ask me, as long as you don't overdo it and text people constantly about all of the things. It can be really effective when it's used selectively. And then we did only have so much space. Like, certain events I've had have a lot of excess capacity. Like, there's budgetary constraints, but like, part of why I loved Fall Fest was we kind of had unlimited space. Like, I was never at risk of having way too many people. We would have 300 to 400 people every year, including adults and kids, and a very low cost per head. So like, that's why I love events where you can have a ton of people, but not break the bank. The movie party was different. It was more expensive, but it created an exclusivity. So the event sold out within the first day of it being marketed, which had only happened one other time, which the other time was a Crab Fest. That's also a great example. I'll have to save that for another episode. Maybe I should do my greatest hits now that I've done my biggest fails. But anyway, with the movie party kind of selling out, we built a huge wait list. And then, you know, with events, like, a lot of people bail at the last minute. Kids are sick. They don't feel like it. Whatever. Things happen. Life happens. So then we were able to like get people in and make them feel kind of special. Like, we got you in. Like, do you want to come? So it created like extra touches. And it also sent a message like, hey, like, don't sleep on event invites from the Bellevue group. Like, you might lose your chance if you don't RSVP right away. So that event had so much, like, you can probably even hear it like in my tone. Like, it had so much magnetism. It just took care of itself because we covered all the right bases with doing something that people were really pumped about, and it didn't need a heavy lift to market it. People were like, oh yeah, I'm in, I'll be there. And they, you know, bought their little free ticket on Eventbrite, and that was that. So I think a party around any major upcoming movie, whether you go geared to adults or kids or both, is a really good idea to run with. So if you want something really takeaway from this episode, I would say think about a movie party or a pie party, or, you know, like Laura said, anyone else you admire, like, pick their brain and see if they'll help you. And if not, you should come join our Facebook group, Relationship Driven Real Estate, and brainstorm in there, because we have over 500 like-minded agents that all love this stuff. So I'm going to stop talking. Laura, anything you want to tie a bow with on this one?
You know, it's kind of an odd bow, but like you talked about, like, I hope we change the mindset of like, you know, you can get started and that flops happen, and that, you know, just be willing to go for it. But what I love the most about events is that it creates all those conversations that you passed over. Like, that's really the fun part of the events, is that it becomes so easy to stay in contact with prospects and your past clients and database, and that you're not saying, hey, how's it going? You bought your house 2 years ago. Checking in to see if you need anything. That yeah. It makes the lead generation so much more fun. And then the event is the bonus.
Yeah. And I think for me, like, my mission for my team is literally, the words are, to create community. It's that clear for me. So for me, the events are definitely a way to retain and talk to relationships and get referrals. But also, like, it just lights me up to create those spaces, make people feel special, make them feel valued, and create these like sort of recurring things that they look forward to every year. So if that speaks to you, then you are my people. And thank you all for listening to us. And we will be back with more soon.
This is going to be the largest transfer of market share we've ever seen between agents in history.
KGCI Real Estate On Air, keeping you informed and empowered as the NAR settlement brings seismic shifts to the real estate industry.
You treat your buyers just like you do a seller. You get a consultation, you pitch, and you compete for the value you will deliver for the fee you're willing to accept.
Stay informed, stay prepared. Depend on KGCI, Real Estate On Air.